College Golf Talk is back. Burko and Brentley with you. We're covering it coast to coast. You're out there in the L.A. area, the chilly, rainy, windy for the Genesis signature event on the PGA Tour. You staying warm, my friend?
I was just about to say, I don't think I'm in Los Angeles. I've been wondering that for a few days now. It is freezing. And that's coming off 3 weeks ago in Orlando, it being sub-freezing and, you know, them not being able to play LPGA tournaments. But this feels colder. I don't know if that's just because I'm, as you can hear in my voice a little bit, I'm starting to get to the expiration date a little bit with my energy. But it's something out here, I'll tell you that. It's not how it was back in 2012 at Riviera in late May when perfect weather and perfect golf.
Yeah, we'll touch on that a little bit later on. Vanessa Borovilos, I'm going to get that right. Vanessa Borovilos joins us from Texas A&M, fresh off a victory, her first of the season. Yeah, we've got a heat wave going on here in the Midwest. Last 3 days in the mid-50s, the snow is melted, the ground is saturated, and it's going to get cold again. But we're turning. Spring is about to come into full circle, at least we're hoping. And some news we'll also get on a little bit later in the pod of one of the all-time, long-time greats appears to be stepping down at the end of this season. We'll touch on that. But without further ado, let's get right to it. Invite our guest of the week on College Golf Talk, Vanessa Borovilos, fresh off a victory, the SEC Golfer of the Week, coming off the victory down there at the Moon Golf. Congratulations. Appreciate you carving out some time to join us on this Friday morning. You've had a couple of days now to process it. Kind of take us through the week, what it means to not only win, but to do so in a tournament that's kind of one of the highlights of the early spring for you.
Yeah, well, I feel like almost every event, there's like two stages of it. So the first few days, they feel like 48-hour days. Time goes by so slow. And then by the end of it, it's like you just blinked and it was over. We were back at the airport, going back home. But it was a pretty cool week. I'm sure as all athletes know, I mean, practicing every day, grinding, it's not always fun. But my team definitely makes it worth it, being able to see them every day. So I think it was a good week. But kind of died off now, just another day back here. So looking forward to seeing what's next.
What stood out to you to win? What were some of the things now that you look back and say, man, I did that well. I'm surprised about that. I need to work on that. How do you kind of break down your weeks, especially coming off a victory, to say, you know what, we're going in the right direction?
Yeah. Physical-wise, I think I got my driver back. Normally, my driver's pretty good, but over the last few tournaments, I've had the hooks, and those are not fun to have. So got those back to where I'm able to swing freely again. Putting was a pretty big key this week, just speed-wise. We always say my coach emphasizes the Tiger Fives, and one of them is avoiding three putts. So, I mean, if anyone's able to avoid three putts all week, they're most likely going to finish high up on the leaderboard. And the last thing was just staying within myself. I mean, you hear everyone talking about it, but I kind of took emotions out of this week, saying, like, I had a conversation with my teammate before I left, and she's like, whether you win or not, it's not really going to change anything that you do. You're still going to wake up the next day, go to practice, do everything the same. And it's true, like, winning doesn't really give you that much fulfillment. So I kind of took that with me during the week and just tried to play golf. And taking the emotions out of it, it really helped me.
Let me follow up on something. Yeah,
go ahead, Burko.
You just said that winning isn't fulfilling, if you will. Then what motivates you? What drives you to go pound balls on the range, to go in the short game area? If winning isn't fulfillment, then why do you get after it as you have done to become one of the best in college golf?
I think it's just the progress that you see. I love working hard at something and seeing it pay off. And I love being in the mix as well. So even though winning may not be that fulfilling feeling, I think being in the mix, coming down those last few holes, it gives you like a dopamine hit. And it's it's nice to feel that and have a chance to put all your hard work to use.
Yeah, I think 7 top 3 finishes now in college, 2 wins. How have you gotten comfortable, you know, being in a final group or being in contention down the stretch there?
Honestly, not. I don't always feel comfortable all the time coming down the stretch, but depending on how much work I had put in those 2-3 weeks before, that's when I feel the most comfortable. I know personally, if I didn't put in the work, if I skipped like a workout or I skipped a drill, like I'll feel that coming down the stretch. Like, yeah, I could have done something more. But this week, I feel like I did everything I could back home, to the point where even after the practice rounds, I hit like 2 chips and left, went to go take a nap. But it's kind of that feeling that you get inside, whether you know if you did enough or not.
So you mentioned, you know, how you enjoy the process and getting better and seeing things pay off. Let's go back to when you first learned the game. Give us a little bit of your background, where you grew up playing, and what's a first memory of, wow, like this sport is really rewarding?
Yeah, my dad took me out to our local golf course when I was, I think it was 3 years old, and it was just a local public course, and they had a mini putt there. So for the first year, year and a half, my dad would just take me out mini putting every day, and he saw that I loved it, so he got me a little set of clubs. And I think the earliest memory I have is beating my dad when I think I was 8 years old. Like, he's not the best golfer, but it was a win for me. And I remember all of us celebrating. His buddies got me a little cake. So I think that was, I mean, I didn't know it at the time, but I think that's when my dad knew that it's something that I really wanted to continue going forward.
So we're not talking mini putt with like windmills and clown's mouths and stuff, just more just like a little putting course.
Pretty much. Yeah. Just 18 holes, going about it a couple times every day.
So how do you end up going from Canada all the way down to College Station to play for Garrett Chadwell and the Texas A&M Aggies?
Well, honestly, I wanted to get as far south as possible. I was done with the cold in the winter.
Doesn't get much more south than that, just about.
I know, right? Although last few weeks have been cold. I don't know what's going on here. But I think that was my main thing when I was in the recruitment process. I was just trying to go somewhere where I can play golf year-round. And once I visited here, our facility is pretty big and there are so many different shots you can hit. Like, I feel like I could actually improve here, which is a great feeling. And this is what I mentioned to everybody, is just the food. Like, on my official visit, they had like steak, ribs, lamb chops, and I hadn't seen anything like that before. So I was like, I think I got to come here.
What was a practice year like for you in Canada? You know, you talk about the weather. How much was inside? How much was outside? Or did you just step away during those 3 or 4 months when it can be brutally cold?
Yeah, so I think normally the golf course shuts down around end of October, beginning of November. And we normally go down south at least a couple times during that spring, just to for like weeks at a time, just to get out of the cold. But our golf course didn't open back up till like mid-May. So it was a long month stretch of just hitting balls inside. And honestly, it's not bad, but it's just your short game feel kind of gets off during those months. But I think it was kind of a mindset thing too. Like, yeah, you're inside, but you can still improve. You can still work on technique. So honestly, I don't think it affected me too much.
April's going to be busy for you, not only collegiately, but a return trip to somewhere that's pretty famous in the game where you also have a bit of a history with the drive, chip, and putt. Give us a sense of your relationship with Augusta National and what you look forward to at the Augusta National Women's Amateur.
Yeah, well, for the DCP when I was younger, I don't think I truly appreciated the Augusta National grounds. Every time I went back, honestly, I was just focused on the game room. Like, the game room was insane. But now going back and learning about all the history, like driving down Magnolia Lane, it's a feeling unlike anything else. And it's a completely different world once you drive down there and once you get to see 18 and look down the fairway. So I'm excited to actually play the course this time and see all the different shots you can hit.
So are you a pretty big gamer? Ping pong, those types of things?
Ping pong, hell yeah. I love ping pong.
Are you any good or is...
I would say I'm pretty good. I beat most of my teammates here at the facility. There's still a couple people I can't beat consistently yet, but it's definitely fun to end practice with that.
Now, what's unique about this team? Because it's an interesting dynamic in that last year was supposed to be a bit of a rebuilding year for Coach Chadwell. You bring in a really good, really deep freshman class. You have one of them leave. You have a transfer that comes in. There's a lot of dynamics going around. What do you guys bond over? And did I hear that there were maybe some like a karaoke title back in the fall or something for the team?
Yes. So at one of our events, we had to do a karaoke dance, and we chose the song Old Town Road, and we practiced literally the night before for like an hour and a half. I think that was probably the first time we truly bonded as a team. I mean, everyone, we see each other every day, but it doesn't necessarily mean like we're bonding essentially. But that dance, I think it brought us a lot closer and showed us that, yeah, we can still have fun out there even during a tournament. And in terms of bonding all together, I mean, it does take time, as with everything. The transfer, Louise, my roommate, she's been amazing. Like, we both have the same humor, so we've gotten along pretty well. But I think it's going to take a bit more time for us to all truly, like, be not necessarily best friends, but, like, feel true comfortable with all of us.
So, Berko, did you know who was the DJ at the karaoke contest?
I don't. So here, let's play a little teaser. What tournament was this at, Vanessa?
The Jim West Challenge.
Was it a coach? Was it a player? Was it...
It might be a professional, former professional athlete, perhaps a pitcher who should be in the Hall of Fame, but probably won't be.
Roger Clemens.
Correct. Yeah, that was... I went a little bit... I gave it away.
Well, I would have been guessing.
Oh, really? You didn't know that was Roger Clemens, the Rocket?
Nope. I was just trying to remember all my moves that I had to do.
Oh, wow. Do you know who Roger Clemens is, though? Does that ring a bell?
Yeah, I wish I did, but I'm ashamed to say I don't.
Well, Google it in your spare time, and for pure power on the mound, one of the all-time greats. He is a Longhorn, though, so I'm not sure you want to get too close.
Not sure I want to do my research.
Correct. Before we let you go, what can this team accomplish in the spring, but most importantly in the postseason? How can the Aggies be in the conversation with Stanford and Wake Forest and USC and others?
Yeah, I think it just comes to stacking days. That's what my coaches always tell us. I mean, you don't need to go 110% every day, but if you're consistent with your practice, which we all are, we're going to have a very good chance in postseason to win a bunch of tournaments and have a good chance at nationals. I think we all just got to keep picking each other up. We don't all have great days, but this team is unbelievably supportive of each other. And I think it's going to be a good run in the spring.
It'll be a fun one to watch, a potential run for the Aggies throughout the spring season off to La Costa. Vanessa, again, appreciate the time. Congratulations on the win. Good luck on the ping pong, the karaoke, and all the good stuff that comes along with being a student athlete.
Appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
Always a pleasure. Vanessa Borovilos, SEC Golfer of the Week. I like it. There's more than just golf there, Brentley, right?
Yeah, that was...
She wants the ribs, the lamb chop. She wants the karaoke. It's kind of refreshing that while golf is important, they, you know, that's a well-rounded young woman right there.
Yeah, that was a fun conversation. And I will say, warning to future guests, when you gloat about the ping pong skills, you know, sometimes you might get a little bit of a fire back from your teammates. So, you know, just a forewarning that everyone else on that Texas A&M team is going to now get to work and step their game up. And it's going to be sweet when they knock her off on the table. But yeah, that was awesome. She's been playing amazing golf. I mean, we were on her last year, and a lot of coaches were too. expecting really big things and a really well-rounded game. And Beth Ann Nichols wrote a really great article too, which is where I got a little bit of these topics from, the great Golf Week writer. But she wrote about how Vanessa's putting strokes, and I think it was an equipment rep or someone said top 10 putting stroke they've ever seen from an amateur women's player. So the driver's there, ball striking's there, the putter's there. She could make a little bit of noise when we get to Augusta National here in a couple months.
Got the job done at Moon Golf, did Vanessa. So did the Auburn Tigers, edging Texas A&M by 3. Got Mississippi State, Wake, and Tennessee rounding out the top 5. So, you know, Auburn is a team, I feel like they needed that win to see Wake at 4th. You know, it's early, not overreacting to it. Because I think there's 5, 7, maybe 10 teams trying to get in that conversation of, are we one of the best 2, 3, 4 in the country? And, you know, you can see teams peak early. We've seen Auburn have moments in recent years. But then on the flip side, when it gets to crunch time, shall we say, maybe a step back. So kind of intrigued if they can build off of that for head coach Melissa Llewellyn.
Yeah, and plus Molly Brown Davidson, who is a transfer from Alabama, which is always, I always find that a little bit of amusing when you have rival, you know, a transfer between two rival teams. But, you know, she's had a heck of a spring. I don't think she played at all last year. She's a sophomore now. She didn't have a top 10 in the fall, but 4th at UCF, now runner-up finish. Katie Cranston coming off a win. She's outside the top 30. Anna Davis outside the top 10. And yet you still win a tournament. That's pretty impressive stuff from the Tigers.
USC back on track, dominant 26-shot win over Eastern Michigan and UCLA in 3rd at the Allison John Wallace. Kathy Park winning individually. I think she needed it, and I think they needed it for USC to truly be considered a legitimate chance come May.
Yeah, this is a get-right game, right? In football or basketball, you know, you go play a mid-major or a paycheck game to try to get back on track after getting your teeth knocked in a little bit. So very good win. I know it's even sweeter when you beat UCLA by, I'm doing the math, quick math now, 35 shots. That's always nice. But how about the job that Josh Brewer continues to do at Eastern Michigan? They're nearly ranked inside the top 30 in the country. They got the Laval twins, Savannah DeBach, who had started the really good Belgian amateur player who had started at Georgia, follows Brewer up there to Michigan. It just shows you that, you know, when you just get a little bit of funding behind a program and a little bit of support there and maybe throw in a private jet, you can climb the ranks pretty quickly in this game.
Yeah, just down the road in Ypsilanti, Michigan from Ann Arbor, you see Andy Walker, the men's coach. I've seen him the last 2 years at the Latin America Amateur Championship. So as you said, when the bankroll is there, these are programs that don't be surprised to see them sort of get to the top of that top half, if that makes sense. You know, it shouldn't shock anyone anymore. A couple other results for the women: Northwestern, Deanna Lee win the Spartan Suncoast Classic, and Iowa State rolling by 39 shots at the Texas Golf Throwdown. Jump over to the men. Florida getting the job done at home. And that's an event as they beat Auburn. They beat Oklahoma State. Some good teams are now going to Gainesville to play in that. There were some lean years, but when you see what Florida did there, and you know me, we've done it long enough, you should hold serve at home. And that's what they did. I think that's what they needed without Luke Poulter in the lineup. Jackson Koivin wins again. He now has 7, the most in the history of the program. I think that was big for Florida. We know Koivin seemingly on his way to winning a Haskins. Still early, but the guy to beat. He's kind of putting his foot down and saying, I'm the best there is.
And there haven't been that many guys who have won multiple Haskins awards. I mean, this isn't what we see in other sports and where you can kind of rack up these player of the year or MVPs, things like that. It would be
just
a huge
accomplishment. Two others, right? Two others have won multiple?
Yeah, Crenshaw won three, I believe. And then who was the other one?
Mickelson. Yeah.
Yeah, Phil. So when you're in company with that, that's pretty good. I kind of missed if you said this earlier, but I was looking up something for later in the show. But 7 wins now, program record. He's going to go down as one of the very best to do it. And it's so weird because you go a few years ago, I remember the first time I ever saw him play was at the U.S. Amateur at Cherry Hills. And he just has this, you know, just a skinny kid, pretty small, has this really violent action. And it's just like you're twisting a rubber band around a pencil and then letting it go. And quiet kid, but, you know, nice to talk to. And you just don't have any idea that those guys can then turn into what he's become. I mean, he's just an absolute machine now. And I guess that's why I'm not a scout, but I just always am amazed at, you know, how quickly these guys go from a nice player, like, you know, not, you don't expect much, to now just absolute superstar.
Other results for the men: Arkansas rallies past Vanderbilt. They win the Watersound Invitational by a shot, even though the Commodores had three different guys, three different days, three different holes make aces, right? Did I get that correct?
Oh, yeah, and 5 on the year, which I have a kind of a neat story. You want to hear it?
About please. That? That's why we're here.
So Scott Limbaugh's been doing this, 25 years or so? As a head golf coach, assistant golf coach, 5 this year, but before that, only 1 as a coach in his entire coaching career. That was back in 2022 at the SEC fall preview at Old Overton, back when they used to do that. And when he was recruiting Gordon Sargent a year earlier, one of the pitches was, because he knew Gordon really loved dogs, and he goes, you know, Gordon, if you come to Vanderbilt, you know, we're going to get you a dog. You know, we're going to have a dog, you know, walking around that golf house for you. Well, he kind of forgot about it. And so when Sargent ultimately gets there, wins a national title as a freshman. And then he's like, hey, coach, remember when you said that you'd get a dog? And he goes, I kind of forgot, but, you know, we're not going to get one right now. So then on the way down to Old Overton, Vanderbilt's playing Alabama in football that Saturday night. And they're like, hey, coach, if Vanderbilt beats Alabama, will you get a dog? And he goes, no. Or he goes, yeah, they're 30-point underdogs. They get beat 55-3. So then the next morning, William Maul, who's also on that team, says, hey, coach, what if we make a hole-in-one? Difficult par threes. Like, Limbaugh's like, I don't know. Like, you guys are pretty good. But he agrees to it. Well, first round, William Maul makes a hole in one. He's jumping up and down. You got to get a dog. You got to get a dog. And so they got a dog a few weeks later. Ace, a little golden doodle who's still running around there. So just kind of a neat little backstory. And now Scott's had his phone blowing up the last few days. A bunch of donors and stuff who know that story are saying, how many more dogs are you going to get? So that's kind of interesting. There's going to be a pack of wolves running around Vanderbilt Legends Club here in a, you know, short time.
Is this a team dog or a Limbaugh team dog?
It's a combo. Both. Actually, when I was talking to Scott yesterday on the phone, Ace was sitting right next to him. So it's a Limbaugh dog, but it does its rounds at the Vanderbilt Golf House. But yeah. he did say no more dogs. That Ace is it. And so then I asked, well, I mean, if you get to like 10 aces on the team on the year, like you need to do something. And so he'll have to figure it out.
Appropriate as our golden doodle,
maybe a
four
horse
and a half months, is roaming around the house. I see her peeking into the office. So
what's her name?
Murphy.
Okay.
Yeah, she's
called Murph.
Yeah, Murph, other names when she doesn't listen, you know. It's like having 3 kids now. Other results quickly: Stanford winning the Prestige by 3 over Texas Tech. Final round canceled due to high winds. Their first victory in nearly 2 years. Houston winning the Border Olympics by a couple of shots. Ryan Boyce, Illinois, sweeping titles at the Hal Williams Collegiate. And is it Trevor Algea?
I believe so.
Trevor Augia pacing.
I didn't include the Fanatics in the rundown.
Yeah, and capturing the John Burns intercollegiate. Not a problem. A couple of quick things before we wrap it up. We referenced it early. Have not gotten confirmation from Chris Hack. We both reached out, haven't heard back, but reports are out, stories in the mix that he'll be stepping down at the end of the season. 30 years running the show in Athens. They got a great recruiting class coming in. Hopefully we will get Chris to join us in the coming weeks. But, you know, the old guard is on their way out collectively across college golf. But I always think of the second national title they won. I believe it was 05, Caves Valley. Final day, every single golfer for Georgia shot even par. Five guys shot even par on the final day to win. That's one of the things that always comes front and center when I think of the Dogs and what they've done.
Yeah, it's crazy to have Mike McGraw, Bruce Hepler, Chris Hack all in a matter of months and all stepping down right around the same time. And kind of the same thing with Mike McGraw, with Chris Hack, when you look at what he produced and what's now on the PGA Tour, and specifically, like, I look at this Genesis Invitational field, a signature event on the PGA Tour. There were like three straight groups where you look at and you got Harmon, Henley, English, Straka, all those guys, only two national championships. You wonder, did match play, if that wasn't around, how many more would he have had? But yeah, you're right. Truly one of the great coaches. And you mentioned confirmation. I just came across a statement, which I'll read a little bit of it. After much reflection and a whirlwind of emotions, I've made the decision to retire as head coach of the University of Georgia men's golf program. While it's bittersweet to step away, genuinely excited for the next chapter and deeply confident in the bright future ahead for the storied program. And it seems like Mookie DeMoss is going to be taken over. So former Georgia player who was, and within the last few years, an assistant coach also on the roster, considered by many to be one of the great short game gurus, at least maybe amongst his peers. So it'll be interesting what he can do. Putting the other hat on for a second, Berko, being a little bit critical, I think Georgia is probably one of the top five, six jobs in the country, if they want it to be. You think so?
Top 10 for sure. I mean, you can split hairs, but yeah, it's...
But they've got, especially something. Looking at other hires that they've made in recent years, they've gone all in on football. That is very clear. Mm-hmm. And as they should. That's the moneymaker. They've had a lot of success. But it's kind of like, if you're Georgia, it wouldn't take much more to really be great in men's golf. Not to say they haven't been great, but they haven't been great in the last handful of years. Why, like, you're going to give a job, a top 10 job in the country, to someone who's never been a head coach before? If I were them, my first call would be to Ryan Hibble, and that would be my last call. But
that was always sort of the rumblings when this moment happened. Could you pry Hibble away from Oklahoma to go back to his alma mater? You wonder if that conversation ever even occurred. We got to do some digging on that, right? Just to see.
I'll call up Ryan Hibble right now and he'll give me everything.
Correct. No. One last thing, Riviera, 2012, you're out there. The NCAAs, I still hold that in regard as the best one I've ever been a part of. Number one and two, Bama, Texas, Spieth, Thomas, freshman. Spieth holding out on the back nine. Whitsitt going right underneath it, long left, 18, Riviera. Fratelli makes the 30-footer. It had everything. And we've had some good ones since, don't get me wrong. But I'd really have to parse through it all to say, has there been a better? The two best teams with now two major champs, multiple major champs at Riviera, 18. You did a great look back on paper, in print, the year after, we created a 10-12 minute television feature a year later, talking to Justin and the coaches and Spieth. And that's still my standard. I'm not sure we'll ever get all those pieces falling into place as they did nearly 14 years ago. That's remarkable.
It's just a different time in college athletics, too. I'm not sure, not to say that these guys don't have the passion, but back then, like, the scores were all you had. Like, you didn't have NIL deals. You didn't have a ton of PGA Tour starts, even though, you know, Spieth had made some by then. So I don't know. It's just, it was just the perfect storm where it all just kind of magically came together with venue and teams and superstars and coaches and weather and all of these things. But I wanted to share one memory that because I was looking back on this earlier in the week, the oral history that I did. And do you remember the story on that 18th hole for Telly and Whitsitt? They know it's down to their match. Whitsitt's just made or just won the 17th hole. They got all the momentum. Limbaugh's, he's rocking to the tee. And Whitsitt gets up there to hit and a golf cart drives by and he has to step off. Do you remember that?
I do. I remember I was perched behind 18 green, so I don't know if I had a great visual of that, as obviously 18 at Riviera goes uphill, but I reread your story the other day, and only in college golf, right?
Well, so the legend was that it was a member of the Longhorn Network who was there doing what ended up being a DVD, like a special coverage of the week and a nice little look back. But so that was the rumor. And so Sewell, and obviously in it, he says Longhorn Network, bunch of knuckleheads. And then Fratelli also thinks that it was a member of the Longhorn Network. Whitsitt, same thing. And everyone thinks this. Ryan Murphy as well. But then John Fields laughs. He goes, no, it was just a guy. Well, turns out, as I uncovered this week, as Will Haskett, a member of the streaming crew, he was the guy on the call, because that was back before Golf Channel had it. And he said he was talking to Spieth this week, and they were talking about kind of some memories. And he told Spieth, he goes, it wasn't a Longhorn Network guy that was in that cart. It was actually a member of our team who didn't know golf at all. So it was an NCAA production guy. And I guess Jordan turns to him and goes, don't say that. We like thinking that it was a Longhorn Network guy. But we just told the story on here too, so the cat's out of the bag.
Tourney name of the week. What do we got to wrap it up?
That's what I was kind of going back through, because I noticed that the dates are all met. I mean, just another thing that's wrong with this website. There's a women's regional when you click on recent results. There's all this stuff. So the tournament name that I got that I thought was kind of cool was actually from like the beginning of this month. So it doesn't really qualify. But the Jack Brown Invitational, just kind of a cool name, Jack Brown. And a little bit of history behind that name. Does that?
Yeah. Like, give it to what Jack Brown. Where's that tournament played?
So I don't know. Well, it's going to be hard to find it again. The Jack Brown. I don't know. I couldn't. Let me see if I can find it again. I found it. It's in Spicewood, Texas, at Lake Cliff Country Club. But it was held February 2nd to 3rd. And it's hosted by Texas A&M International.
All right. Jack Brown.
But do you know the significance behind the name Jack Brown?
I mean, I remember Jim Brown, the longtime Ohio State Buckeye men's golf coach, Brown.
Jackson Brown, this
singer, but he has an E at the end of his name.
Correct, and he's running on empty still, probably.
Ooh, good.
Yeah, but so Jack Brown is actually the what do you call it when you use a fake name? What's that called?
Pseudonym.
Pseudonym,
right? Yeah.
So Jack Brown. Back when, was Charlie Woods' pseudonym when he would play tournaments until recently. He would enter tournaments as Jack Brown. It would be on the tournament, like tee times. And then day of the tournament, it would switch to Charlie Woods.
I'll be darned. Look at you.
Little inside information there.
I love it. I love it.
Purely just by me observing and noticing that the switch.
What the good ones do, right? Again, our thanks to Vanessa Borovillos, Texas A&M sophomore, getting the job done at the Moon Golf Invitational. And as always, we appreciate you for checking us out this week on College Golf Talk. We'll run it back again next week. But until then, for Brentley, I'm Burko. Enjoy the weekend. We'll see you next time.